Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature. No matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted you could join me today. Now, as I record this, we're right in the middle of the festive season of Christmas and New Year, so there is a clear holiday bias, but with plenty of tips to help you get through what can be a tricky time. But if you're listening at any other time of the year, stay with me. There's plenty for you too. Later, we'll take a deep dive into the life lessons of that enduring character, Scrooge, in the festive Dickens favourite, A Christmas Carol. It's all about personal alchemy, as we'll discover. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Michelle Ellman back to the show. Michelle's a well-known life coach who was named one of the Sun newspaper's 50 most inspirational women in the UK. She's the author of The Joy of Being Selfish and very much a boundaries queen. So when I asked her how we can all stay sane in the middle of Christmas and New Year madness, I wasn't surprised by her answer.
Thanks for having me back on the show. The best way to do it is boundaries. So if you don't have boundaries in place already, Christmas is when your boundaries are likely to get even worse. Now that we're the 23rd of December, if you haven't had boundaries so far, you are probably exhausted. You are probably burnt out. This is the time of year when we have even more requests on us than usual. We have even more events on us as usual, and our calendars are packed, all of these things. And so if you can't say no, you will just get overwhelmed at this time of year.
Yeah, saying no is a big thing, isn't it? You really have to be able to say no.
Absolutely. And when it comes to events, the key is actually to ask yourself if you want to go. A lot of the times we tend to kick that ball down the road and go, you know, you don't want to go when you get the invite in, but you say yes. And then you plan to cancel the day of, or you plan to make up an excuse and say you have a family emergency the day of, when actually that's just poor form. And it's not the more polite version. I think we tell ourselves this illusion that it's more polite to lie, to make up a white lie, when actually you can just be honest when you get the invite and say, no, unfortunately, I'm unavailable that day. You don't need to give any more reason. You don't need to justify why you can't come. And often, if you do give a reason, you justify yourselves where you're creating a whole paragraph of excuses. What people find is they will actually think that's a problem for them to solve. So let's say you're like, oh, I'm so swamped with work. They will suggest things like, well, why don't you do your work this weekend and then come anyway?
Yeah.
Whereas if you keep it short and sweet, just say you're unavailable, say you don't want to come, say good luck, have fun anyway, then you aren't giving that person the information to create a gap in your excuse.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's if you're, you know, if you don't want to go to a party, say, or you don't want to spend the day at somebody's house because they've invited you because they think it's the done thing to do, you know. But what about people with family coming round and, you know, all the present giving and everything else? I mean, very often you get a whole bunch of presents that you don't want. And what do you do about that?
Well, I think also the whole idea of a present is someone is giving you something with no expectation in return. So if someone gives you a present and you can't afford to reciprocate, be honest, tell them that. You shouldn't have to go into debt in order to appease all the people in your life. And if they truly care about you and they truly love you, they don't want you putting yourself in debt. Everyone understands this time of year, but to be honest, we should understand every year, especially with the cost of living crisis, that not everyone can afford to have presents for every person in their life. It doesn't mean they don't care about you. It doesn't mean they don't love you. And frankly, if someone is in your life and measures your love for them based on material possessions, then frankly, that's probably not someone you should have in your life.
Yeah. And it's probably a bit late now, but what I've done, for instance, is say to everybody, I'm not giving presents this year. I'm really not, you know, and please don't get me anything because I actually don't need anything.
That's a wonderful way of doing it because you're pre-warning people of their expectations. So if they don't want to give you a present unless you give them one back, then at least they know. So that honesty, that transparency is the way to deal with it. And frankly, I think we have just evolved to a point where you shouldn't be shaming someone on the fact that they can't afford to reciprocate in the same way. Everyone has a different financial situation. And if you love someone, you should be understanding about that.
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty fair, to be honest with you. And as I say, it's very difficult, though, at this time of year for a lot of people, because there are these expectations and you're trying to manage everybody's expectations. And if you're the person who's holding the family get together over Christmas, that can be an added pressure, can't it?
Yes, and you don't have to do everything yourself. Sometimes when you're the person hosting, you think you have to pay for the entire meal, provide the entire meal, when actually you can ask your guests to bring things, whether it's them bringing the alcohol or them actually cooking a section of the meal, whether that's the dessert or even like, can you do all the sides? I'll have the turkey, but can you make sure that we have enough veg? All of these things are ways other people can help. And most of the time they are happy to help. We just don't think to ask. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be the perfect host. But if I always think, whatever party it is, not even just a Christmas party, but a birthday party, if you are the host and you're not having fun, why did you bother? Because the whole point is it's your party, so you should be able to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, the parties are for enjoying. They're not for getting stressed over, but so many of us put ourselves through all of that. So let's say we're on Christmas Day, and most of us in the UK at least open our gifts on Christmas Day. If we've agreed that we're going to give each other gifts, say you don't like something, what's the best way of dealing with that? It's a bit rude to say, ooh, you know, not really very keen on that. What do you do?
To be honest, I think I can still appreciate the sentiment, the thought, and I might regift it later. I personally would not say to the person's face that I didn't like their gift.
No.
Because I think it is more about the effort and thought. And so I would regift it. And I don't think it's bad to regift things, because I think what matters most to me in terms of my values is that things aren't going to waste. I think a lot of waste happens this time of year. A lot of presents are like jokey junk presents, which happens on both sides, because the person doesn't know what to give you, and then you also don't know what to do with the thing once you've got it. But it's meant to be a courtesy. So when I invite people around, I say either bring something for the actual meal or don't bother, because I don't want just an extra, like, I don't know, notebook seems to be the thing.
Really?
I have a stack of notebooks. Like, I don't need another notebook.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I seriously don't really need anything. And I think it would be very difficult for people to buy presents for me anyway, in that I don't, you know, I don't use the normal sort of perfumed toiletry products and all that sort of thing. And so, you know, really, it's just as well not to get anything and maybe get together for a meal at some stage over the Christmas period where we all go Dutch.
I'm not a big present person either. And one thing I've started doing, especially around birthdays, actually, is saying, if you really want to get me something, then get me an experience that we can do together.
Yes.
And it actually also extends Christmas, for at least for my birthday. It ended up lasting for like 3 months, because friends were getting me like sushi making classes. Friends were getting me a night at a board game cafe. Interesting things that I've never done before, and actually added to my life and created a great experience that I'm going to remember of us spending time together, which to me is much more important. It's okay if your love language is gifts and you really love gifts, but you also have to understand that's not everyone's way of communicating. And if that's your love language, it doesn't mean they don't love you. It just means they have a different way of expressing their love.
Yes, absolutely. And girl after my own heart, I like to extend my birthday for the whole birthday month. But it is doing things like that. It's going out for a meal with friends, or doing something, you know, doing a thing with friends. And certainly I've booked to go and see a show with a friend, which would be just at the beginning of January. And, you know, that's a way of celebrating Christmas, really, which is something that we'll both enjoy and remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So re-gifting is okay. I think a lot of people are slightly worried that if you're not seen to be wearing the thing, when the person next sees you, you know, it'll be taken as an insult. Or, you know, if grandma comes around and doesn't find the ornament that she gave you for Christmas, you know, sitting pride of place on a shelf somewhere, it's going to be a bad thing. But really, we need to get away from that, don't we?
I find it really strange tests that loved ones run, because why are you going searching around my house trying to find me? I actually had a friend do this to me recently, and I won't lie, it affected our friendship, because I had bought his book and he couldn't find it on my bookshelf. And so it talked to me in the middle of a party of like 20 people in front of other people and went, "You threw away my book, didn't you?" And I was like, "Actually, no, I didn't. Your book is in my office, which is where I keep my favorite books." And it was just such a moment of like lack of faith in me, lack of benefit of the doubt. And actually it been thrown in his face because it actually was in my like special area.
Yeah.
It made me feel disrespected, unappreciated, and to think that low of someone. But even if I had, it didn't mean I didn't enjoy the book. It didn't mean that I didn't appreciate it. But why are you running these tests? When you, again, a gift is, in its definition, you're meant to give it without expectation. So that's letting go of the expectation that you get a gift in return, but also letting go of the expectation of how much they use it and how much they like it. You are giving that with the intention of positive feelings from you, not to run a test on whether to see they're a good enough person and how much they use it. And again, this measuring your love on material possessions is just not the way to do it. Now, if you feel hurt that someone hasn't used your gift, then communicate that. But running some test of trying to snoop and find it in the house is just an indirect way of communicating.
Yeah, it's not very helpful at all. And I'm wondering how much the whole Scrooge story has an impact on this, you know, whether we're all scared of being branded a Scrooge at Christmas or a Grinch at Christmas.
Well, I've embraced that name. I've called myself a Grinch. It's okay. The most controversial post I've ever done on my page is I posted on Christmas Day a quote that literally said, "You are allowed to hate Christmas." And the whole comment section was filled with people being like, "Why do you have to be so negative on Christmas?" And I was like, am I being negative? Because I said, I'm giving the people who want permission to hate Christmas permission to do so. And there is nothing in the entire world that the whole world can agree on. So why do we all have to agree that this one holiday is both important and should matter to all of us? Some of us don't enjoy it. Some of us don't like the fact that it now starts in September. Some of us don't like the pressure of perfect families. And you should be able to vocalize that. Now, I've tried to draw a line more recently of I don't want to impact anyone else's joy and happiness. If you love Christmas, I'm not trying to stop you from doing that. But just in that one post, I was trying to create a space for people who don't feel the same. And by creating this norm of you should love Christmas, you should feel happy this time of year, that's when shame is created. So the people who don't feel that way, maybe you don't have the perfect family, maybe you need to work on Christmas. There are so many people, sometimes Christmas is associated with grief or the loss of someone.
Absolutely.
Christmas can be a really hard time of year, and this pressure to be happy, I don't think anyone likes it when someone tells you you should be happy today and you need to be happy for all 24 hours. It's just not realistic. Everyone's going to have different reactions to a time of year or day of the year.
Yes. And, you know, bearing in mind that not everybody in the world is somebody who would be celebrating Christmas anyway. You might have a completely different religion, for instance, and it might not, you know, mean anything to you at all. But it reminds me of, and it happened this year as well, a friend of mine said, "Oh, and we would love you to come and spend Christmas with us." I'm, you know, on my own. And I've spent many times on my own at Christmas, and I've learned how to enjoy that.
Yeah.
What I don't enjoy is living somebody else's Christmas, you know, and feeling like this kind of appendage or, you know, I mean, that's not the intention on their part at all. But I would rather just be enjoying a quiet time, right? Yeah. When everybody's busy doing something else, and I can be completely at rest, at peace on my own, doing what I want to do for one day of the year, one day.
Yeah.
But there's this incredible pressure from friends saying, "Oh, you must come and spend Christmas with us." Why? Why?
I think it's their own discomfort with being alone. It's the same way that I've seen people, even on social media, take videos of like an old man sitting in a restaurant eating by himself, being like, oh, what, how sad is that? How do you know that man's sad? How do you know that he's enjoying his own company? But it's this idea of if you're alone, you must be out of, because you don't have anyone else, not because you actually chose to be alone.
Yeah.
And it's this association that actually stems a lot from our idea of love lives, of if someone is alone, then it's out of lack and not because
yes.
of their own choice. And so we pity single people. We pity people who are sat alone in a restaurant. We pity people who have to spend Christmas alone and don't actually contemplate. There are people who actively are choosing to be single and not be in a relationship, who are actively choosing to spend a day alone. And that alone time isn't the greatest threat there is. And actually could be something that people actually enjoy doing. But because they're not okay with their own alone time, they project that on you. So yeah. From their side, what they should be doing is, of course, offer. It's a lovely gesture.
Yes.
But don't push. Offer that gesture and say, I'm genuinely offering this. I genuinely want you to come. You won't be an inconvenience. But if you want to spend it alone, also know that I'm here for you. You can give me a call on the day, whatever it is. But I'll give you your space if that's what you want. You have to respect people's wishes and be conscious of when you're projecting your own feelings about something on someone else and assuming how that person feels. Because as you said, you're very happy on your own. So great, that's a wonderful day that you've allocated as your alone time. That now it's everyone else's job to respect that.
Yeah. Yes. And some of the least enjoyable Christmases I've spent have been when I've allowed myself to be cajoled into joining in a big family Christmas day. When I would just be sitting there thinking, I also don't say this too loudly, but I'm not very keen on Christmas food either, because I don't think it's particularly healthy. It doesn't, I just don't like it that much. So you're sitting at a table groaning with all this food that you don't really want to eat.
Yeah.
And in company, it's very genial and very lovely, but you'd actually far rather just be on your own. Now, that's not to say that some people would like to be invited to spend Christmas with somebody. A lot of people would do, and that's lovely, but not everybody does. Yeah.
So I spent Christmas alone last year, and I was invited to two or three friends' houses. And the reason why I ended up saying no was because I was like, I don't like sleeping in other people's beds. I don't want to be, I'm never fully comfortable when I'm in someone else's house. So if anyone wants to come to me, you're welcome. And two friends actually did end up coming to me, but I was also happy to spend it completely alone. But I was like, anyone is welcome at my place. I just don't want to be in anyone else's place. And we did it our own way. I don't like turkey, so we didn't have turkey.
Yeah.
I'm the same around Christmas food. I don't like a Christmas pudding. I don't like Brussels sprouts. I don't like a lot of things.
Oh, no, they're the things I do like. The Brussels sprouts are the things that I really do.
Well, I created a whole meal of my favourite things that weren't particularly Christmassy.
Yeah.
And I think the most Christmassy thing that happened today is we pulled a cracker and that was about it. And that was enough for me. And actually, it was the best Christmas I'd ever had because it was in my own space and I could do things my way. I stayed in my pyjamas all day. It was great.
Oh, I have done that and thoroughly enjoyed it. Let's allow ourselves to do what's good for us rather than what we're told we ought to do because that's how it's done. Food for thought there, as we take a short break right now to hear from our sponsors. Back after this.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, coach and author, Michelle Ellman. We rejoin the conversation as I recalled some of my Christmases past. This isn't a coping mechanism in any way, but what I have done and enjoyed is volunteer at Christmas and volunteer in either a shelter, a homeless shelter, or where you're there dishing up the Christmas dinners, Christmas lunches to people who really don't have a great deal. and do appreciate it. And that's been really enjoyable. I've had some great conversations with people doing that. I haven't done that every year. I know some people do a regular Christmas Day volunteering stint, and that's another way of spending Christmas. But it's not, it's not a coping mechanism, which is what we're talking about here. But I think you're right. We have to be very clear. We have to learn to be clear and happy with our decisions over Christmas and be very honest with people about what we want and don't want, don't we?
Yeah, I think also when it comes to Christmas, there's a lot of pressure on families. And ultimately, what I find is there are so many invites from people who you've not seen since last Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
If there are a group of people who you see once a year, you actually have to question yourself, why do I only see them at Christmas when I feel obliged to and don't see them any other time? And a lot of the time it's because there's a lot of body shaming around this kind of time of year. A lot of people commenting on your eating, especially when you're going to these family events with people you haven't particularly chosen to spend your time with. There are fights around politics, there are fights. It's okay to opt out of these conversations. It's okay to be like, if you keep commenting on my weight, then I'm going to go in the other room. You can come find me when you want to talk about something else.
Yeah.
But actually putting those boundaries down and not just accepting, oh, well, that's just my uncle, he's always like that. And normalizing this kind of behavior that seems to be only reserved for Christmas, that you have to put up with it. You don't have to put up with it. And family don't get an exemption from your boundaries.
No, I think that's very, very true. Very clear with your family. That's what you have to be. And especially your family, I would suggest, don't you think?
Absolutely. Because I also think the longest relationships tend to be the most ingrained relationships.
Yeah.
And so if you are a people pleaser and your norm is obliging everyone and putting everyone else first and being a people pleaser, then when you first start setting boundaries, especially with your family, they're going to have a shock, and they're also going to try to convince you to go back to the way you were. So you need to be even more firm in your boundaries and dead set on them not changing just because it's making everyone else's life more inconvenient. Your job is to look after you and make your life convenient.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we all forget at Christmas, or often forget at Christmas. Our job is to look after us.
Well, it's meant to be a holiday, right? So if you're ending the year being even more exhausted than you were at the beginning of December, you're doing it wrong. So what I love is entering January with fresh energy, with actual energy, and not being completely depleted. So going into the new year, that means you need to create some time in December for alone time, even if it's just to reflect on the last 12 months, or you want to sit in the corner and read by yourself. Taking some time to actually do whatever you consider rest is really important at this time of the year.
I think it really is. And some great tips and points there, Michelle. Thank you so much. Now, if anybody wants to find out more about your work and what you do, do you have any tips on your website, which is michelleelman.com? Is it .com or .co.uk?
.com. And most of my tips are on my Instagram. And I have a new book coming out in 7 days.
Yay.
Called The Selfish Romantic.
Ah, yes. Now, I saw that. Now, I'm looking for, hopefully I'll be able to see a copy of that at some stage. But The Selfish Romantic, very, very important. I think that's something that we might have to talk about another time.
Yes.
Maybe in the new year.
It's all about making your love life more boundaried and figuring out how to date without feeling bad about yourself.
A great topic of conversation. As I say, definitely something that we'll have to talk about in the new year, I reckon. But for now, Michelle, yeah, we don't need to be scared about being seen to be a Grinch. Embrace your Grinch, embrace your Scrooge if that's what you want to do. Be happy finding time to rest and be alone and really enforce those boundaries.
Wonderful. Sounds like a perfect Christmas.
For a perfect Christmas, exactly. Thank you so much, Michelle. That's great.
Thank you.
So go on, check out Michelle's Instagram for some holiday inspiration, or inspiration for any time of year, really. Now, we were talking there about how it's fine to be a Grinch or a Scrooge at Christmas if that's what really works for us. But let's look at those two characters more closely. Both are famous curmudgeons who end up going through something of a hero's journey to redeem themselves. And both The Grinch and A Christmas Carol have embedded themselves into our psyche so deeply that they've even become part of our language. Such is the power of storytelling. I'm a big Charles Dickens fan, and I've loved his novella A Christmas Carol since I read it as a youngster. There's something compelling about the story, which the myriad of different interpretations that we've seen over the years would seem to bear out. A Christmas Carol may have been written in Victorian England, but it has a profound message for these times. And my next guest, Laurie Bick Jensen, is a PR professional and host of a podcast called Seeker's Insights with Laurie Elizabeth. Her podcast takes you into the worlds and works of practitioners of alternative arts and metaphysical sciences, but today she's enlightening us with the very modern healing message that lies at the heart of this seemingly timeless tale. Laurie, A Christmas Carol, it's a great story. It's it stood the test of time hugely. I mean, look at the different adaptations as well of the story.
And how many movies do we have?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All being shown around this time, as we know. But it's a story of transformation, and it's easy to forget that, isn't it? And you've done some work on it, haven't you? You've been looking into it in some depth.
I have. It's been a story that fascinates me from literally being a schoolgirl. First of all, the lovely use of language has always appealed to me, but he was lovely in his use of language also in describing the desperate nature of humanity that existed around Victorian England. Excuse me. And I believe that Dickens was probably the voice of his time. So to look into his works, I think, as transformative is appropriate.
Yes, I think you're right. He was quite campaigning.
Oh, very much so. He did not like the workhouses, and he did not like prisons, and he wanted them completely resolved in some way.
Absolutely. Well, he'd had some experience, hadn't he, in his own life.
He was in the workhouses as a child, yeah.
Mm. And exactly, yeah.
He never spoke about them, JJ.
No, but you can see that he will have written about, you know, he wrote about them in not just in The Christmas Carol, he wrote about them in other books that he wrote.
Yes.
And he did have a complete contempt for the way that they treated people. Yeah, absolutely. And so then Scrooge as the main character in A Christmas Carol. A lot of people talk about being a Scrooge at Christmas, or it's become a word in the English language, hasn't it? You know, he's a Scrooge.
It's synonymous with Grinch.
It is synonymous with Grinch, exactly. But actually, we forget that Scrooge went through a process and he came out the other side a completely transformed person.
He did, in a single night, which is the miracle that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But think about it. It's the dark night of the soul.
Yes.
This is what he goes through in a single night. He's got an awful lot of help, which a lot of people don't get when they go through their own dark nights of the soul. But it's the story is this, a story of transformation. And it's also really about the triumph of light over darkness.
Mm.
Each of these presences, these ghosts that come to him are about the light. Even the darkest character that comes, it's literally bringing light into his soul, just as it is, about bringing light into the darkness. So,
yeah,
bringing it indoors.
Yeah, yeah. And you talked earlier when we were talking earlier before we started recording about how the ghosts really were almost angels coming to teach him.
Well, when you think about it, that's true. This is the way I view them. Ghosts are generally spirits who are trapped due to unfinished business, or their memories that keep replaying, or they're just not settled. They're anything but completely literate and aware of a certain person's life and interjecting. I see that more as an angelic force, and that they have so taken their silo of time for his benefit, his soul's benefit, that to me is the messenger's business. That's the teacher's business. And that's an angelic process. So I really broke this down into the three actual stages that the ghosts represent. And Dickens was involved in reform. Okay.
Yes,
he was a Reformation person. And since he experienced the workhouses firsthand and was traumatized by them, he didn't want that going on, period. But in his reform, redemption was the word of the day. It was the and that's how his story was billed when it first came out. His novella was billed as a story of redemption.
Yes.
But I would submit to you that it's more a story of transformation. And in these transformative times, I'd like people to see it more as that transformative story, not just because he was miserly and misogynistic and all those different things, but because it's an analogy for really what I think mankind can go through as a whole in its own way. So that there are three stages that the ghosts represent in the awakening that he has to go through to become transformed. So his redemption is a result, but his process is transformation.
Yeah.
And the first thing that, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you use the word awakening.
Yes.
A lot of people bandy around, don't they? But he did have to wake up to a few home truths and to what was going on around him.
And then he had to wake up in the morning.
Yes.
So it's an awakening upon an awakening upon an awakening. So yes, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But when you take a look at his process, it's the first ghost, right? Christmas past. To me, that represents introspection. That's where he gets to go back and see the dysfunction of his lifetime because his father shunned him. He let the village of the boarding school raise Ebenezer, not him. This dysfunction was just highlighted, and he got to see for himself his loneliness from being outside of that. That introspection was required as a base, I believe, for anything else to happen. Then as you go into Christmas present, you know, this jolly fellow who almost looks like St. Nicholas, thank you very much.
Yes, exactly.
ferries him around with his brazier, the torch that he carries and these things. And what is he doing? He's observing. So he's got his own introspection going on. Now he's observing. Let's take it one at a time. He goes to Cratchit's house. And he sees that despite their poverty, the working poor, despite their meager surroundings, his meager paycheck, just for, oh, by the way, he gets to see it doesn't mar their joy. And especially with the character to pluck on the heartstrings more in Dickens' time, the creature of little Tim.
Yeah.
God bless us, everyone. Mm-hmm. That was the final thing. And it's always about hope in the darkness, because the ghost says, if these shadows go unaltered by events in the future, there's always hope. It's never taken away from him. So that was the first time it was actually handed to him directly. And then when you get to the final ghost, the dark presence, if you will, that doesn't speak, just simply points. That's the ultimate transformation right there. Because if these shadows go unaltered, you're going in the ground no matter what. So But it's going to be, are you going to be reviled? Are you going to be ridiculed? Or are you going to be something else? And that something else is yet to be written. And so that was where he chose to transform. And my point is, if one individual chooses to transform, you see it in the rest of the story, he transforms the rest of the world, especially that around him. He changes the life of the small child. He changes the life of the family that works with him. He changes the life of his nephew, because he goes there and he sees they want for nothing. Yet he's shunned them for bad reasons, and they still welcome him with open arms. So all of these are transformative things. So it's a story of transformation, not redemption.
And it's one person, as you said, transforming and transforming everything around them. I mean, our own transformation transforms the world or helps transform the world. And that's something.
Just being present. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, just being present. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful analysis of the story. I'm not entirely sure that's what was going through Dickens's head when he wrote
redemption
it.
Redemption was the thing.
Yeah. But, you know, from a Victorian standpoint, yes, that was probably as near as he would get. We've moved on a great deal since then.
But one of the things that you have to remember, though, is that Scrooge never once expected anyone to solve his problems, even when he became aware of them.
No, he didn't. You're right.
No, Yeah. And what I think Dickens was also dealing with was the political ramifications of his time. And the poor attempt at taking care of the poor, the workhouses, the prisons, those types of things that they mention, you know, that's verging on socialism. But that's all the politicalization of compassion and kindness. We're going to take care of you. Mm-hmm. And they don't. And that's the truth of the whole idea. Yeah. So then communism is the forced institution and politicalization of this. So he was really ahead of his time in much of what he was saying, but he still held to the same core. If you transform yourself, you transform the world.
So true. And that's what I call personal alchemy. Time for another short break now. We'll be back with more from Laurie right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 and we're back with more from Laurie Bick Jensen. Now, if you're still thinking A Christmas Carol is just a Christmas story with no relevance to modern lives or well-being, think again.
And so as we're going through a period of transformation right now, I think everybody pretty much can see, if they look around, that things are changing and they're changing very quickly. Mm-hmm. So how can we map the lessons from A Christmas Carol into our own lives?
Well, I think COVID gave us the opportunity for that introspection. I firmly believe that that was given as an opportunity because this was global.
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. Everyone was told to lock down, to stay put, to the ruinization almost of an economy in the United States. But we've bounced back from that. We're bouncing back. We're still reeling here and there. But it's that time of introspection that we were given. Go get your affairs in order. Go figure out what you want in life. And you don't have the interference of your daily routine. You're having to leave your house to come back to your house to deal with. It was all right there, right then. And you could figure out immediately what you could live with and what you couldn't.
Yeah.
That was one thing that was given to us.
Yeah. But then you have to take action, having worked that out. So, of course, at the end of the Christmas Carol, Scrooge goes around to the family's house and they have he's all very sort of magnanimous and they have a fabulous time. So you do have to take that action. And move forward. So having had that period of introspection, hopefully a lot of us will have made good use of that and taken into account what it is that we want. And a lot of people have, because there's the great resignation that's been going on around the world. People saying, I don't want to do this job anymore. I want to do something.
I'm not going to give you 12 hours of my 24 anymore. I'll give you 8 and that's about it. Yeah.
There
was a lot of that judgment coming back, and that's their observation coming out. So they've had the time to be at home. They've observed what it could be and what it isn't. They have all of that and then they've internalized it. So that makes sense.
Yes.
Now we transform the world.
Well, I fully expect that to happen, but, but then on the flip side of that, a lot of people during COVID found it very difficult. They weren't using that period as a period of introspection. They were fretting about the future, about what's coming down the line. And that's still affecting a lot of people today because a lot of people are really stressed out.
They are.
So, that's the sort of shadow side of this. But there's still hope for these people as well, isn't there?
Well, that's a reflection of Dickens. That's a really strong reflection of Dickens, England, because, you know, we're dealing with high inflation. Mm-hmm. I know the UK is dealing with high inflation.
Yeah, very much so.
It's strangling how hard it is with so many people. Just the mere price of petrol alone is horrendous for people who have to get from point A to point B for their jobs. Mm-hmm. That's still a reflection of the Dickensian time frame. Because it's There were so many working poor. They had a class system very strongly in place. There was no real middle class unless you were a merchant. Merchant accounting house, accounting, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was more an incredible sized working poor.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah.
And that's what Dickens chose to write about. Oliver Twist, all of his books in some way, shape or form reflected that. If it didn't reflect the actual financial side of it, it reflected the personal
deprivation and hardship and struggle. Yeah.
And depravity of spirit
yeah.
in many ways.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. Okay. So maybe this is a time to reread A Christmas Carol, the original Christmas mm-hmm. Carol, mm-hmm. and just, you know, pay attention to what messages are coming out of the book, and see how we could apply this transition, this transformation in our own lives. And if anybody hasn't read A Christmas Carol and doesn't know what we're talking about, I do recommend you get a copy of it. You'll find it online everywhere, or even just, you know, if nothing else, watch one of the films that have been made. There have been some,
especially the 1954 Alistair Sim.
I was just going to say that one.
My favorite of all.
I was just going to say that's probably one of the truest to the story.
I have to say, honestly, that George C. Scott did an excellent job, however.
Yeah. Yes. But that old one. It's a great version. So watch the film and just watch it with a different lens, through a different mm-hmm. lens, and think of it in terms of a transformation story and how you might turn your life around. You know, look at the areas of your life that, you know, maybe you don't really want to look at. Maybe you've just been sublimating it.
Right, exactly. And even if it involves trauma, I mean, Scrooge was a traumatized human. And he brought that traumatic influence to bear, even to the point where he would harm others before being harmed himself in his rejection of Belle, because he made it so that she would reject him. And then his not going after her, that was the final rejection. Mm. So the wounded child exists in everybody, but the redemption of that child is through transformation. And it can happen at any stage.
It can happen at any stage if we decide to take the action to move through it.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't need to see ghosts of Christmas past and Christmas present and, you know, Christmas future.
I think
future.
We see them every year.
We probably do. We probably do. But it is interesting, isn't it? It's fascinating. And, you know, it's fascinating that Dickens wrote this book virtually, you know, I think it took him a couple of days maybe to write mm-hmm. it. I mean, it just poured out of him. It's not a very long book. It's a novella. He absolutely seemed to have put pen to paper and there it was.
And then he stuck his head up and said, oh, I guess I'm done. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. If I'm right, I may be wrong, but I think I'm right in saying that it wasn't well received by the publishers at first.
Not at first. They thought it was a little bit severe. And perhaps even scary. Mm. But I believe Dickens knew his audience better and understood that that would be not just popular then. He couldn't foresee the future, I'm pretty sure, but I'm sure he felt it had some legs to it.
Yes, I think so. He certainly knew his audience. He certainly wrote to his audience. That's absolutely clear. Yeah. And I think it's useful to bear that in mind when you're reading Dickens, because some people might find it a little archaic in language now, but it is beautiful language. And he was writing to a specific audience, people who were maybe not quite so aware as he was.
Right.
Of they the were trials blinders and tribulations.
On.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think that with his awareness of his audience, everyone benefits, regardless of class. Everyone can see themselves in the story. And isn't that, after all, the purpose of universal appeal?
Oh, yeah. No, and he had that in spades, didn't he? He really did. Yeah. And so, the A Christmas Carol, Scrooge as an icon of transformation. I love
not
that.
As redeemed, not as a redeemed man, but as an icon of transformation. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I do love that. And yes, let's let go of the redemption notion, because It doesn't actually, redemption doesn't mean so much today, does it? It's not, it doesn't really mean anything to anybody today, but transformation definitely. And that understanding that no matter what you've done, where you are, you know, you can transform your life, your well-being. And let's face it, Scrooge wasn't a very happy man, not very mentally well, as in he had a lot of stresses, and he would have you know, behaved in that way partly because he was so locked down.
He was so wounded himself.
So wounded himself.
He was abandoned. He was abandoned from every side in his life.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, understanding that no matter where you are on a mental health scale or a well-being scale, whatever scale you want to measure yourself by, you can move on from that and you can transform your life, your well-being, everything around you, if you are willing to go through a transformation process. And it won't always be pretty.
No, but there's always hope.
And there's always hope.
That's the secondary message to all of this. Is no matter what you've done, no matter who you think you are, no matter who others perceive you to be, there's always the hope that you can do what you must do, or you must see what you must see. And that's all the story of transformation right there.
Yeah. It's obvious why it's become such a staple at Christmas, because of course Christmas is a time when we talk about redemption. We talk about, you know, if you are religious, you talk and Christian, you talk about redemption. You talk about Jesus Christ coming to help, you know, help us redeem ourselves. And there's this incredible story which really spoke to the Victorian mindset.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to interrupt. That were very prevalent in their mindset was God and church.
Yeah.
And the supernatural, because remember also during this time, this is the rise of spirituality, spiritualism. It's also a rise of theosophy, and all of those different things are coming into the mix and social structure. So the people are looking at this, and instead of being scared, as I think Dickens publishers thought that might happen, it was in fact immensely appealing to his audience.
Yes, I think it would be Madame Blavatsky. People like that who were very, very famous in those days, weren't they? The whole spiritualism, yes, and seances being held and people trying to contact the dead. It would have been a very familiar notion to
So rather than have angels appear to do the lesson, which I still believe that there's that aspect to them, he made them ghosts. And how appealing would that be in that time frame?
Exactly.
So it was his device.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So really, almost, you could say, updating the Christmas story to and transferring it to Victorian London.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic. So what a great gift for all of us. Laurie, I thank you so much, because it's been such a wonderful eye-opener to look at this well-loved story. I've loved it since I was a child. Just a beautiful way to see it through fresh eyes and to understand it from a different viewpoint, and see it as this story of transformation, which is a story for these times and for all of us.
It is. Pay no attention to the archaic language. It was simply the manners of the time to talk as they did. The story itself holds, because the transformation of the individual transforms the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're so right. But let's not have it rewritten in modern English, because I think lose a lot.
It would lose very much.
I think it would lose an awful lot. Well, on that note, Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you so much, Laurie, for coming on the show and talking to us about Scrooge and transformation in A Christmas Carol. It's a wonderful insight. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention and talking to us about it today.
It's been my pleasure, and God bless us, everyone.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Universal truths. Don't let the negative take over your life. And remember, we can turn just about anything around if we're willing to look at the difficult stuff we'd rather not face. Health and well-being, relationships, it's all there. Laurie's podcast again is Seeker's Insights with Laurie Elizabeth, so do check that out.
I know I say this every time, but it's true. Once again, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with my guests. I would have loved to have chatted longer, but sadly, that's all for today. Now, remember, you can download Alchemy 101 from the UKHealthRadio.com website and find the show on the UK Health Radio podcast. Just search for Alchemy 101 and UK Health Radio wherever you listen to your favourites. And if you like what you hear, you might enjoy our sister publication, Health Triangle Magazine. You'll find out how to access that at UKHealthRadio.com too. For now, if you're listening around Christmas, have a wonderful time, and remember, one of the best things to do in the middle of it all, get out of your chair and go for a walk in nature. I'll be doing that. Join me next time for more Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.